The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Boot computer, list of today's guests, signing in chat room, lining up news articles, checking levels, adjusting cam, secure wire connection, restart computer, checking video feed.
With all she's got to do, you'd think Nicole Sandler was a one-woman band. Well, she is, and she's ready for another show. And now, here's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
All right, so how was your afternoon? Wow. Cassidy Hutchinson. Oh, man, that's a name that we're all going to remember. Of course, the former guy tweeted out about old Cassidy. Here's what he said. I hardly know who this person Cassidy Hutchinson is, other than I heard very negative things about her. It is a total phony and leaker. And when she requested to go with certain others of the team to Florida after my having served a full term in office, I personally turned her request down. Why did she want to go with us if she felt we were so terrible? I understand she was very upset and angry that I didn't want her to go or to be a member of the team. She's bad news. Yeah. Gee, that was fun. For those of you who were here yesterday, wow, right? And I told you, I knew when I played the song at the end, remember I said, I hope they don't block the video? Well, it was the BBC because it was their footage and they blocked the video. So I had to edit the song out off the end of the show video in order for YouTube to make it live again. And it is. So now you can share the video again if you want people to hear the Bill Baird interview. And we do. and on my blog where I post the show each day, yesterday's, I posted the Olivia Rodrigo Lily Allen video from Glastonbury where they sang and dedicated Fuck You to Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett. It was so good. And I'll tell you, it was the one thing that warmed my heart after the interview with Bill Baird, which broke it. My heart was already broken, but that broke it more. This is a man who paved the way for us to have what we had for the last 50 years, and he's being ignored by history. I mean, at least Wikipedia has his story right, but he needs to be able to get his book out. So again, please do share that video. The show is posted at NicoleSandler.com/6-27-22. Both the audio podcast and the video, the YouTube video, are posted there along with the song. So yeah, let's do what we can. All right. Now to today. Oh my goodness. What a week this has been, a few weeks in American history. But one of us, one of our number, her timing couldn't be better. You know, Laffy has been complaining for the longest time that this whole move to Canada to get clearance to go there was taking so long. But sure enough, the day that the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, by coincidence, she and Mr. Laffy and Hammy were on their way up to Canada, not for good yet, but to establish their, I think, permanent residency. For a month, they've got to be there. So Laffy will join us today, but she'll be on the phone and she'll be from Canada. So what do you say? Let's bring her in now.
If the news gives you the blues, here's the perfect place to go. It's Tuesdays with Carla on the Nicole Sandler Show.
I'm so busy, like, you know, dancing around to the music that I forgot to bring our picture up. And there's Laffy and myself. And of course, the woman of the hour, day, year, Cassidy Hutchinson. And there is Laffy. Hey, Laffy.
Hello. Hey, from Canada. Woohoo. Can you hear me?
I hear you okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I'm going to turn you up. Remember, I turned you down while I'm turning you up again.
Okay.
Got to get this right. Okay.
Yep.
You're up. Okay.
So I got that right?
Yeah,
the
okay,
day.
So,
the day Roe sort of, was overturned is the day that you were on the road. But that was just a coincidence.
No. Yeah. No, I think you're right. But oh, look at that. That's an old picture. Wow.
I know, but I couldn't really find the picture. Newer one. I couldn't find the other one.
Oh, okay. Anywho, I think you're right. And we're up here for a month because we can only spend a month because Mr. Laffey has to work, and he's working actually right now. We moved all his editing stuff with us.
Uh-huh.
But we can only go away for a month at a time because he's got to be around. But and also because we have to be there for his dad, who's 96.
Right. And those who don't know, Mr. Laffey is a writer on Naked and Afraid,
a producer.
Right? A producer. Ooh.
He produces it. But anyway, the way it works is we got accepted back in December as permanent residents. But you have to get a card or you have to start the ball rolling by going to Canada and choosing to say, okay, this is the day we're actually going to start our permanent residency. Well, that was yesterday.
Ooh.
We got there. We went through customs or whatever, the border thing. And then we said, here's our papers. What do? We don't understand what we're doing. And they go, oh, drive over there, get out of your car and go into that building and tell them that. So we had to show them the papers that showed that we were accepted. And from yesterday forward, we now have the clock ticking. We have to spend 2 out of every 5 years in order to maintain our status.
Okay.
And the way we're doing it right now is we're spending a month here, a month there, because we can't leave. So we can only go about a month at a time. But, and I hate putting it this way, but when Mr. Laffey's dad finally passes away, which I hope won't be for a while, but when he does, we will then move up here permanently.
Right, I understand.
That's how it's working.
I understand. Well, from the chat room, Kamishwari Kate says that she is. Oh shoot, I just lost her. She's there somewhere.
Oh, no.
She's on some lake. Hold on. She says she's at Lake. I just had her here on English Bay. She's over on English Bay. Do you know where that is?
No idea.
Okay.
Is it in Vancouver, like North Vancouver?
I don't know.
Vancouver?
Yeah, I don't know. But she's in the YouTube chat room, so you can go in there and ask her yourself, because I have no idea.
No, I can't. I'm not doing that. I'll mess everything up if I do that. I barely got set up, and I just went over to YouTube. In fact, your YouTube, I'm on your page, the live page. It took forever to show the picture and load, and I'm way behind. Like, even though I moved the little thingy to the very end, I'm way behind on, like, you're talking right now.
Okay.
And it's not just 7 seconds.
Gotcha.
Right? Anyway, I'm not touching anything.
Anyway, all right.
Yeah,
so today, I did pop the popcorn because I knew it was going to be good. And oh my God, can we talk about Cassidy Hutchinson?
First of all, she's
26 years old. I didn't have that kind of poise.
She's going to age quickly.
Well, she already is.
You know, Trump's got the guns out for her, as you read, but he's going to sick everybody on this poor woman, and she better have protection.
Right. Well, I was thinking that's probably why they rushed her testimony, because once they realized what she was going to say, you heard at the end, at the very end, Liz Cheney, they brought out the heavy duty, guns and talked about the threatening nature some of the witnesses are getting, the threats
don't cross Trump, basically, is what they're saying. It's the mafia. It's like the Trump mafia, the whole thing. I have 4 tweets, but I also came across an article in the Washington Post that gives you 4 of the basic highlights that I could read you right now, and then we can go back and do stuff,
and I have clips. I've got like 20 clips, so I can bring them up at any time.
Okay, so the number one, I think they have 4. So number one is, these are what they call the basics or something. The most stunning revelation.
Okay.
One, Trump knew his supporters had weapons and encouraged them to march on the Capitol, and he tried to go too.
Yep.
So that's the first one.
Yep.
Okay. The second one, I'll read them all and then we can go back.
Okay.
The second one is Trump wrestled with secret security agents to go to the Capitol.
Well, he didn't necessarily wrestle with them. He physically attacked his main Secret Service guy inside the car. Oh, we'll play that.
He reached for his
Clavicle.
Clavicle. Three, and this is also, you know, not worded correctly, but Trump threw dishes regularly. In other words, there was ketchup all over the wall.
He threw his lunch at the wall in the dining room off the Oval Office. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or as I said, Trump whines, throws Heinz. Then the last one is Trump didn't want to call off the rioters. Look how they understate this. Trump didn't want to call off the rioters. Okay, so those are the four main, takeaways.
Oh, but there's so much more. Little tidbits. Yeah. Like at the very end, both Rudy Giuliani and Mark Meadows asked for pardons.
Oh, yeah.
Woo-hoo!
Oh, yeah. Okay,
woo-hoo.
They're not guilty at all, are
no.
they? What is it about pardons? You have to be guilty in order to be pardoned.
Right.
You have committed a crime.
And what did the former guy say? Why would anybody take the fifth? Why would anybody take the fifth if they didn't do anything wrong? You got to be guilty to take the fifth. Mike Flynn, oh, boy, do we have audio of him taking the fifth.
Oh, my God. He took the fifth when they just said, do you believe in a peaceful transfer of power?
You know, what does that mean? Yeah. No, I take the fifth? Oh, my God.
I take the fifth. That's like, I'm admitting that I had a hand in not doing that.
Right. It's stunning. Just absolutely stunning.
It is stunning.
And
every moment of that hearing.
Every moment.
Stunning.
So let's start. Let me play this first clip that I pulled. It was from near the beginning of her testimony. Again, Cassidy Hutchinson was the executive assistant to Mark Meadows, the White House chief of staff. At the time, 24, 25 years old? Very bright, very observant, obviously. Her office, they showed a layout of the West Wing. And her office was basically in between the chief of staff, Mark Meadows, and the president. I mean, and the vice president on the other side. So she heard everything.
Right, and she said also that the little diagram that you're talking about, she said it actually looks
bigger
on the diagram.
Right.
It's much bigger. It was a much smaller area. So, yes, she definitely did hear things.
Yes. Okay.
She had access.
Yes.
Let's put it that way.
Now, the first thing we hear about, you know, Mark Meadows likes to play dumb. I guess it's easy when you are dumb, but he likes to play dumb. And the first thing, the first major revelation that I picked up on was this one. Here we go.
Today, with an exchange that first provided Ms. Hutchinson a tangible sense of the ongoing planning for the events of January 6th. On January 2nd, 4 days before the attack on our Capitol, President Trump's lead lawyer, Mr. Giuliani, was meeting with White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows and others. Ms. Hutchinson, do you remember Mr. Giuliani meeting with Mr. Meadows on January 2nd, 2021?
I do. He met with Mr. Meadows in the evening of January 2nd, 2021.
And we understand that you walked Mr. Giuliani out of the White House that night, and he talked to you about January 6th. What do you remember him saying?
As Mr. Giuliani and I were walking to his vehicles that evening, he looked at me and said something to the effect of, Pastor, are you excited for the 6th? It's going to be a great day.
What?
I remember looking at him saying, Rudy, could you explain what's happening on the 6th? He had responded something to the effect of, we're going to the Capitol. It's going to be great. The president's going to be there. He's going to look powerful. He's going to be with the members. He's going to be with the senators. Talk to the chief about it. Talk to the chief about it. He knows about it.
And did you go back then up to the West Wing and tell Mr. Meadows about your conversation with Mr. Giuliani?
I did. After Mr. Giuliani had left the campus that evening, I went back up to our office and I found Mr. Meadows in his office on the couch. He was scrolling through his phone. I remember leaning against the doorway and saying, I had an interesting conversation with Rudy, Mark. Sounds like we're going to go to the Capitol. He didn't look up from his phone and said something to the effect of, there's a lot going on, Cass, but I don't know. Things might get real, real bad on January 6th.
Things might get real, real bad on January 6th. I don't know about you, but when I heard that, it's like, oh, boy, and that's right out of the gate.
Oh, that was like, one of the really early every single thing they asked her, there was a new bombshell.
Yeah,
and that one was getting all this, retweets and that quote and everything because it was that bad.
Yes.
It was that incriminating.
But she knew, but he told her days ahead, this could get really, really bad. So they knew.
Yes.
Nothing was spontaneous. Nothing just happened. This was all planned and they knew it. The other thing,
exactly.
That was the first time in that clip that she said, well, Mark Meadows, you know, he sits on his couch and he scrolls on his phone. It sounds like that's all he did.
And he used that also as a way to ignore things.
Yeah.
Like, yes, that sounds like all he ever did, but he would use it as a device to turn people away. Like, he just wouldn't listen. You know, I don't know what you're going to, if you're going to play the clips later, but when she tried to talk to him about something kind of version, he scrolled through his phone and never looked up.
Never looked up. And she said and a few times throughout her testimony, she's like, so I went in Mark's office and he was sitting on the sofa scrolling through his phone. She must have said that four times. I'm telling you, that's all he ever did. Okay, so now I want to move on because there's a lot of stuff here. You know how the right wingers were saying there was nobody had weapons. It was a tourist day.
Yes.
So Liz Cheney played tapes of the police dispatches talking about all the weapons that they found on these people.
Trump's speech were screened so they could attend the rally at the Ellipse. They had weapons and other items that were confiscated: pepper spray, knives, brass knuckles, tasers, body armor, gas masks, batons, blunt weapons. And those were just from the people who chose to go through the security for the president's event on the Ellipse.
The ones who went through
the
security.
Not the several thousand members of the crowd who refused to go through the mags and watched from the lawn near the Washington Monument. The Select Committee has learned about reports from outside the magnetometers and has obtained police radio transmissions identifying individuals with firearms, including AR-15s,
lovely,
near the Ellipse on the morning of January 6th. Let's listen.
An individual in a tree, maybe a white male, about 6 feet tall, thin build, brown cowboy boots. He's got blue jeans and a blue jean jacket, and underneath the blue jean jacket, the complainants both saw a stock of an AR-15.
AR-15, nice.
A group of individuals, about five to eight other individuals. Two of the individuals in that group at the base of the tree near the porta potties were wearing green fatigues, green olive drab style fatigues, about 5'8", 5'9", skinny white males, brown cowboy boots. They had Glock
in the tree.
Style pistols in their waistband.
8736 with the message that subject, weapon on his right hip. Copy that, he's in the tree.
Motor 1, make sure BPD knows they have an elevated threat in the tree, south side of Constitution Avenue. Look for the Don't Trail Me flag, American flag face mask, cowboy boots, weapon on the right side hip.
I got three men walking down the street in fatigue while carrying AR-15, copy at 14 for Independent.
Okay, so there's a million more. So let me just keep going on this
Mr.
subject.
Ornato told
the
president
listen
about
to this.
Weapons
Whoops.
At the rally on the morning of January 6th.
That's what Mr. Ornato relayed to me.
And here's how you characterize Mr. Meadows' general response when people raised concerns about what could happen on January 6th.
So at the time, in the days leading up to the 6th, there were lots of public reports about how things might go bad on the 6th, even the potential for violence. If I'm hearing you correctly, what stands out to you is that Mr. Meadows did not share those concerns, or at least did not act on those concerns?
Yeah. Did not act on those concerns would be accurate.
But other people raised them to him? Like in this exchange, you mentioned that Mr. Ornato pulled them aside.
That's correct.
Okay, so the next part, you know where we're going with this, Laffy. Donald Trump didn't care.
Just to be clear, Ms. Hutchinson, is it your understanding that the president wanted to take the mags away and said that the armed individuals were not there to hurt him?
That's a fair assessment.
They were
the
not
issue
there
wasn't
to hurt him.
With the amount of space available in the official rally area only, but instead that people did not want to have to go through the mags. Let's listen to a portion of what you told us about that.
in this particular instance, it wasn't the capacity of our space, it was the mags and the people that didn't want to come through. And that's what Tony had been trying to relay to him that morning. You know, it's not the issues that we encountered on the campaign. We have enough space, or they don't want to come in right now. They have weapons that they don't want confiscated by the Secret Service, and they're fine on the mall. They can see you on the mall, and they want to march straight to the Capitol from the mall.
The president apparently wanted all attendees inside the official rally space and repeatedly said, quote, they're not here to hurt me.
You know, I'm going to bring this down now because we need to talk about this. He was so, they're standing. So she's testifying. She was in that tent, the backstage tent at the rally, and he was pissed because it looked like the place wasn't packed. Uh-huh. And it wasn't, because so many people wouldn't go through what the magnetometer, the weapon detector, uh-huh. the metal detector. They right. wouldn't go through it because they didn't want to give up their weapons. They didn't want them confiscated. So they said they can see from outside of the walled-in area where he was giving the speech. Well, Trump was pissed. This is lovely. Listen to this.
The text messages also stress that President Trump kept mentioning the OTR and off the record movement.
This is a different one. Well, okay, wait a minute.
That in a minute.
In a minute.
But could you tell us, first of all, who it is in the text who was furious?
The he in that text that I was referring to.
She wrote he's fucking furious.
And
why?
Why was he furious, Ms. Hutchinson?
He was furious because he wanted the arena that we had on the Ellipse to be maxed out at capacity for all attendees. The advance team had relayed to him that the mags were free-flowing. Everybody who wanted to come in had already come in, but he still was angry about the extra space and wanted more people to come in.
And did you go to the rally in the presidential motorcade?
I was there, yes, in the motorcade.
And were you backstage with the president and other members of his staff and family?
Yeah,
I was.
And you told us, Ms. Hutchinson, about particular comments that you heard while you were in the tent area.
When we were in the offstage announce area tent behind the stage, he was very concerned about the shot, meaning the photograph that we would get, because the rally space wasn't full.
Optics. He's concerned about optics.
One of the reasons, which I've previously stated, was because he wanted it to be full and for people to not feel excluded because they'd come far to watch him at the rally. And he felt the mags were at fault for not letting everybody in. But another leading reason, and likely the primary reason, is because he wanted it full and he was angry that we weren't letting people through the mags with weapons, what the Secret Service deems as weapons and our weapons. But when we were in the offstage announced tent, I was part of a conversation. I was in the vicinity of a conversation where I overheard the president say something to the effect of, you know, I don't effing care that they have weapons. They're not here to hurt me. Take the effing mags away. Let my people in and march to the Capitol from here.
Okay, so that's, she said that he was livid because the place wasn't packed and the picture showed empty spaces in the crowd watching his address at the rally. And he says, take the weapons, the metal detectors away. Let people in with their weapons. I don't care. They're not here to hurt me.
They're not out for me, right. They don't. As long as he's okay.
As long as he's
okay. And it's always about appearance. It's always central casting, right? We got to have the big, you know, the big crowds. We got to show we have the biggest crowds ever. It's always the same. I wish I could remember what it was. Lawrence O'Donnell the other night, just either last night or the night before, was so astute. Everybody, I wish I could remember the topic now, but it was Trump. The reason Trump did what he did was for appearances. It wasn't other motives that people attribute to him. It's always about appearances.
Yeah.
If something doesn't look the way he wants it to look. And that's usually his motivation.
Right. No, he wants the picture. And the picture, it was like, you know, what my mind went to with the inauguration when it was obviously half empty. And it was the biggest crowd ever. Well, because he doesn't like it to appear that there's plenty of room.
Oh, I'll never forget during one of his rallies back in the 2016 election where they were showing half-empty stadium.
Yeah.
And he would get furious.
Yep.
Well, you know, and here's something I always want. Like, I was listening to her talk, and it's just like everybody else on TV. They always say things like, well, he was very concerned and irate. No, he was pissed off and livid, and he was desperate and crazy. So I wish they would just, he's very concerned.
Yes.
He's concerned.
Well, I think we're going to hear.
He was concerned.
Yes. I think we're going to hear different descriptions of him from today's Tesma. Okay. So next up. So they're talking about the rally. Well, and Liz Cheney brought up the fact that in Mark Meadows' book, he lied. And he said that Trump, you know, said he, I'm going to the Capitol. I'll be there with, we're going to march to the Capitol and I'll be there with you. Well, that he really, really wanted to go, but the lawyers, everyone told him, no, you can't go. And this is what led to him accosting the Secret Service agents. Let me play this.
Oh, this to me was the most vivid picture of who Trump is.
Yes.
Because when they were describing what you're going to play, I just want to put this in everybody's head. What you're going to play about the way they describe what he just is about to do, just think about all the sexual assault.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And even, oh, what's her name? The magazine writer who said that he raped her.
E. Jean Carroll.
She tweeted, this is what he does. She tweeted over this clip. This is what he does. Okay, so there's a couple of clips here because I'm not sure which is which. So, she's on top of it. All right, so here is Liz Cheney leading into this segment about him wanting to march to the Capitol.
Justin, did you have any conversations with Pat Cipollone about his concerns about
the White House counsel, Pat Cipollone.
On January 3rd, Mr. Cipollone had approached me knowing that Mark had raised the prospect of going up to the Capitol on January 6th. Mr. Cipollone and I had a brief private conversation where he said to me, we need to make sure that this doesn't happen. This would be legally a terrible idea for us. We have serious legal concerns if we go up to the Capitol that day.
You think?
And he then urged me to continue relaying that to Mr. Meadows because it's my understanding that Mr. Cipollone thought that Mr. Meadows was indeed pushing this along with the president.
Huh.
And we understand, Ms. Hutchinson, that you also spoke to Mr. Cipollone on the morning of the 6th as you were about to go to the rally on the Ellipse. And Mr. Cipollone said something to you like, make sure the movement to the Capitol does not happen. Is that correct?
That's correct. I saw Mr. Cipollone right before I walked out onto West Exec that morning. And Mr. Cipollone said something to the effect of, please make sure we don't go up to the Capitol, Cassidy. Keep in touch with me. We're going to get charged with every crime imaginable if we meet that movement.
We're going to get charged with every crime imaginable.
And do you remember which crimes Mr. Cipollone was concerned with?
All of
them. In the
days
leading up to the 6th, we had conversations about potentially obstructing justice or defrauding the electoral count.
Ooh. Okay, so let me just keep going because we're developing a narrative here.
Ms. Hutchinson, when you returned to the White House in the motorcade after the president's speech, where did you go?
When I returned to the White House, I walked upstairs towards the chief of staff's office, and I noticed Mr. Renato lingering outside of the office. Once we had made eye contact, he
quickly waved me to go into his office. Mr. Renato is the deputy chief of staff,
which was just across the hall from mine. When I went in, he shut the door, and I noticed Bobby Engel, who is the head of Mr. Trump's security detail, sitting in a chair, just looking somewhat discombobulated and a little lost. And I looked at Tony, and he had said, did you effing hear what happened in the Beast? I said, no, Tony, I just got back. What happened? Tony proceeded to tell me that when the president got in the Beast, he was under the impression from Mr. Meadows that the off-the-record movement to the Capitol was still possible and likely to happen, but that Bobby had more information. So once the president had gotten into the vehicle with Bobby, he thought that they were going up to the Capitol, and when Bobby had relayed to him, we're not, we don't have the assets to do it, It's not secure. We're going back to the West Wing. The president had very strong, very angry response to that.
You think?
Tony described him as being irate.
Uh-huh.
The president said something to the effect of, "I'm the effing president. Take me up to the Capitol now."
I could hear him.
To which Bobby responded,
"Me too.
Sir, we have to go back to the West Wing."
Uh-oh.
The president reached up towards the front of the vehicle to grab at the steering wheel. Mr. Engel grabbed his arm, said, "Sir, you need to take your hand off the steering wheel.
Oh my God.
We're going back to the West Wing. We're not going to the Capitol." Mr. Trump then used his free hand to lunge towards Bobby Engel. And when Mr. Renato had recounted this story to me, he had motioned towards his clavicles.
His clavicle, his collarbones, I guess, right? Wow. Let's just keep it going. Just finish this part of the story and then we'll talk about it.
Yeah. Towards the front of the vehicle to grab at the steering wheel. Mr. Engel grabbed his arm, said, "Sir, you need to take your hand off the steering wheel. We're going back to the West Wing. We're not going to the Capitol." Mr. Trump then used his free hand to lunge towards Bobby Engel. And when Mr. Renato had recounted this story to me, he had motioned towards his clavicles.
And was Mr. Engel in the room as Mr. Renato told you this story?
He was.
Did Mr. Engel correct or disagree with any part of the story from Mr. Renato?
Mr. Engel did not correct or disagree with any part of the story.
Uh-oh.
Did Mr. Engel ever after that tell you that what Mr. Renato had just said was untrue?
Neither Mr. Renato nor Mr. Engel told me ever that it was untrue.
Uh-oh.
And despite this altercation, this physical altercation, during the ride back to the White House, President Trump still demanded to go to the Capitol.
He physically assaulted a Secret Service agent.
Yes, and tried to take over with his little tiny hand.
Yes.
He tried to forcibly steer.
And what? I don't think he drives. I don't think he drives. He's lived in New York his whole life, where people don't drive. And Trump doesn't drive.
Okay, I have to tell you, I don't know if you saw this tweet. I don't have it in front of me, but the GOP House Judiciary said this is all hearsay. And every lawyer on Twitter said, basically, you're the House Judiciary and you don't know what hearsay is?
Oh, my God.
And then
God.
They all went on to explain in detail how this is not hearsay, how it's corroborated, how she was, here and there and everywhere. Anyway, that's how desperate they are. That they have the judiciary coming in with a little one-liner on Twitter. It's so
unbelievable.
Humiliating. But yes,
unbelievable.
I mean, he's assaulting. That's why I was saying when you're listening to this, think about the sexual assault.
Because he's
roughhousing this man who's trying to drive him. Oh, God.
Right.
I mean, I have this picture in my head. And for these poor women.
I know, right? Against his wishes, they take him back to the White House. And little Donnie's really, really mad. Oh, my God. And what does a little child do when he's mad? He has a temper tantrum.
Ms. Hutchinson described in the presidential vehicle was not the first time that the president had become very angry about issues relating to the election.
Uh-oh.
On December 1, 2020, Attorney General Barr said in an interview that the Department of Justice had not found evidence of widespread election fraud sufficient to change the outcome of the election.
That's right.
Ms. Hutchinson, how did the president react to hearing that news?
Around the time that I understand the AP article went live, I remember hearing noise coming from down the hallway, so I poked my head out of the office.
Uh-oh.
I saw the valet walking towards our office. He had said, "Get the chief down to the dining room. The president wants him."
Uh-oh.
So Mark went down to the dining room, came back to the office a few minutes later. After Mark had returned, I left the office and went down to the dining room, and I noticed that the door was propped open, and the valet was inside the dining room changing the tablecloth off of the dining room table.
Uh-oh.
He motioned for me to come in.
Donnie had an accident.
And then pointed towards the front of the room near the fireplace mantle and the TV, where I first noticed there was ketchup dripping down the wall.
Ooh.
And there's a shattered porcelain plate on the floor. The valet had articulated that the president was extremely angry at the Attorney General's AP interview and had thrown his lunch against the wall, which was causing them to have to clean up. So I grabbed a towel and started wiping the ketchup off of the wall to help the valet out. And he said something to the effect of, he's really ticked off about this. I would stay clear of him right now.
He's really
ticked off about this right now.
I would stay clear of him anyway. Laugh, are you there? Oh,
wait, hold on.
Okay.
My earphones just completely disconnected. Can you hear me?
No, I hear you. Okay. Well, why don't you get them together?
Okay.
I'll keep going. I'll play another clip because
okay, they're asking me for some number here. I don't even know what they're talking
about. Okay. All right. Do you want
I'll try while we're talking, but
no, it says pass key. Oh, wait, I think I just heard you. Hold on.
Technology. Technology. Can't live with it. Can't live without it.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you fine.
Okay.
All right.
And they reconnected. I don't know what happened.
Okay. Well.
Okay.
All right. So moving right along. So now we know, as if we didn't already, Donald has a temper and he throws food and breaks plates inside the White House.
Yes.
Well, now, you know, we didn't hear a whole lot. We were waiting to hear about Roger Stone and Mark Meadows, two cretins who both claimed executive privilege. I'm sorry. Roger Stone and Michael Flynn and Mark Meadows spoke to them on the 5th, the night before.
Ms. Hutchinson, is it your understanding that President Trump asked Mark Meadows to speak with Roger Stone and General Flynn on January 5th?
That's correct. That is my understanding.
And Ms. Hutchinson, is it your understanding that Mr. Meadows called Mr. Stone on the 5th?
I'm under the impression that Mr. Meadows did complete both a call to Mr. Stone and General Flynn the evening of the 5th.
Uh-oh.
And do you know what they talked about that evening, Ms. Hutchinson?
I'm not sure.
Is it your understanding that Mr. Giuliani, Mr. Eastman, and others had set up what has been called, quote, a war room at the Willard Hotel on the night of the 5th?
I was aware of that the night of the 5th.
And do you know if Mr. Meadows ever intended to go to the Willard Hotel on the night of the 5th?
Mr. Meadows had a conversation with me where he wanted me to work with Secret Service on a movement from the White House to the Willard Hotel so he could attend the meeting or meetings with Mr. Giuliani and his associates in the war room.
And what was your view as to whether or not Mr. Meadows should go to the Willard that night?
Hell no.
I had made it clear to Mr. Meadows that I didn't believe it was a smart idea for him to go to the Willard Hotel that night. I wasn't sure everything that was going on at the Willard Hotel, although I knew enough about what Mr. Giuliani and his associates were pushing during this period. I didn't think that it was something appropriate for the White House Chief of Staff to attend or to consider involvement in. I made that clear to Mr. Meadows. Throughout the afternoon, he mentioned a few more times going up to the Willard Hotel that evening and then eventually dropped the subject the night of the 5th and said that he would dial in instead.
He would dial in instead. Laffy.
Yeah. She,
at the time, she's, 24 or 25?
I was just thinking that.
And she's the one.
I was just thinking that.
And she's the one telling the White House Chief of Staff,
right.
Oh, no, you don't go there. That's not appropriate.
Exactly. I was looking at her thinking, oh, she reminds me of all these students I used to teach. If they had had to go to me and say, you know, Laffy,
I don't think you should steal stuff out of the principal's office. Yeah. And I'm going, no, I want to. Shut the fuck up. And they're like, no, you see, it's wrong to do that. It might hurt you.
Right.
No, and do it.
And as Chris Frederick just said in the chat room, and what does one do in a war room? They were planning what was going to happen the next yeah. day.
Exactly.
Oh, exactly. My God.
Let me read you the four tweets I have
okay,
while I
please.
Got you here.
Yes, go.
Okay, they're short.
Okay.
Digby, there was a lot of important detail in Hutchinson's testimony, but for me, the most revealing was that Rudy and Trump were planning for violence on the 6th.
That's right.
And Meadows knows it.
That's right.
And Meadows knows it. So he's in big trouble. Rude Pundit. It was a planned assassination attempt on members of Congress and the vice president. Trump wanted them killed.
Yep,
he sure did.
Yep.
Jeff Charlotte.
Oh.
Conventional wisdom is Trumpers refusing to testify or afraid of accountability. I think it's, this is one of the things I'm so glad. I think it's worse. I'm afraid many are afraid of what would happen to them if Trump returns to power, which is to say, they're betting he will.
Oh.
And finally, yeah. Ellie. Yeah. And then Ellie Mistal, which is one you know. If I may be uncharacteristically positive, it could be that Garland has not indicted Meadows for contempt. It's because he's about to indict him for conspiracy to obstruct Ooh. Congress, assuming without evidence that this isn't the first time he's heard Hutchinson's testimony. Meadows could well be in a flip or go to jail box after that testimony. And then he said, granted, because granted, I'm on an awful lot of JQuil.
He's got a really
bad cold right now.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Oh, he's awesome. But yeah, I mean, all of that is true.
Yep.
You know, that's what Empty Wheel has been saying too. That she's been saying it all along. By the way, that Meadows is probably hasn't had his ass hauled in because they're working on him to do other things. Let's put it that way. You know, either to spill some beans and or to grab him on another charge.
Yes.
So, I think they're all beginning to see that now. All the lawyers are starting to go, oh, yeah, Empty Wheel was right. Oh, yeah,
yes.
Ellie was right.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I believe yeah. that a case is being built. Okay, so then
yeah.
the next major big part of it, and we had heard hints about this, is Donald Trump's reaction to the crowd chanting, hang Mike Pence, hang Mike Pence,
oh, yeah.
hang Mike Pence. So let's hear that, because this was stunning. Stunning.
Until mm-hmm. Mark hung up the phone, handed it back to me. I went back to my desk. A couple minutes later, him and Pat came back, possibly Eric Hirschman too. I'm pretty sure Eric Hirschman was there. But I'm confident it was Pat that was there.
Pat Cipollone, White House counsel.
I remember Pat saying something to the effect of, Mark, we need to do something more. They're literally calling for the vice president to be effing hung. And Mark had responded something to the effect of, you heard him, Pat. He thinks Mike deserves it. He doesn't think they're doing anything wrong. To which mm-hmm. Pat said something, this is effing crazy. We need to be doing something more. Briefly stepped into Mark's office. And when Mark had said something, to the effect of, he doesn't think they're doing anything wrong, knowing what I had heard briefly in the dining room, coupled with Pat discussing the hang Mike Pence chance in the lobby of our office, and then Mark's response there to be the rioters in the Capitol that were chanting for the vice president to be hung.
Let me pause here on this point. The rioters chanted hang Mike Pence.
Yes, they did.
The president of the United States, Donald Trump, said that, quote, Mike deserves it,
yeah,
and that those rioters were not doing anything wrong. This is a sentiment that he has expressed.
He has expressed over and over and over again. And then she went on to ask Cassidy.
President Trump's view that the rioters were not doing anything wrong and that, quote, Mike deserved it, helps us to understand why the president did not ask the rioters to leave the Capitol for multiple hours. In fact, he put this tweet out at 2:24 p.m.
The tweet says, Mike Pence didn't have the courage to do what should have been done to protect our country. Hold on one second. Let me finish reading it. To protect our country and our Constitution, giving states a chance to certify a corrected set of facts, nor the fraudulent or inaccurate ones which they were asked to previously certify. U.S. demands the truth.
The vice president did not have the courage to do what needed to be done.
I do.
And Ms. Hutchinson, what was your reaction when you saw this tweet?
As a staffer that works to always represent the administration to the best of my ability and to showcase the good things that he had done for the country, I remember feeling frustrated, disappointed, and really, it felt personal. It was really sad. As an American, I was disgusted. It was unpatriotic. It was un-American. We were watching the Capitol building get defaced over a lie. And it was something that was really hard in that moment to digest, knowing what I'd been hearing down the hall in the conversations that were happening, seeing that tweet come up and knowing what was happening on the Hill. And it's something that I still struggle to work through the emotions of that.
Only one part of that gave me pause. What good things did he do for the country?
You know, that's so funny. That's exactly what I was stuck on.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped listening almost after that point. Like, what?
Right.
What
but here's the thing.
About?
This is a young woman who, in her early 20s, was obviously, I mean, before she went to work for Mark Meadows, she worked for Steve Scalise. She worked for, you know, she was in Republican government. This was a true believer. She is one of them. She's not one of us. She is a Republican, a young Republican. And she's, you know, she just saw. And it takes I don't want to call her a child, but think she was 23, 24 when this was going on. That's pretty damn. That's Allison's age, you know. She's got giant balls on her, I got to say. So we also learned.
As opposed to, what you just said, she's got giant balls.
Right.
As opposed to Trump, who was always playing the victim.
Always. Oh, he's always the victim. They're lying about me. It's fake news. Well.
Yeah, but that's how he gets his base to follow him. Look what they're doing to Trump.
But he also got the Fox, not news channel, to carry his water. But what we found out was about the texts. And Sean Hannity even knew that cabinet members were talking about invoking the 25th Amendment to get him out of office because he was seriously fucked in the head. Listen to this.
Mm-hmm.
At 3:31 p.m. on January 6th, Sean Hannity of Fox News texted Mark Meadows.
Can he make a statement?
Said, quote,
I saw the tweet.
Can he make a statement? I saw the tweet. Ask people to leave the Capitol. Later that evening, Mr. Hannity sent another text message to Mark Meadows. This time, he shared a link to a tweet.
From
that
Ed O'Keefe.
That tweet reported that President Trump's cabinet secretaries were considering invoking the 25th Amendment to remove President Trump from office. As you can see on the screen, the 25th Amendment to the Constitution creates a process for the transition of power if a president is unfit or unable to serve. 25th Amendment has never been used to remove a president. But the committee has learned that after the attack on the U.S. Capitol, this was being discussed by members of President Trump's cabinet as a way of stripping the full power of the presidency from Donald Trump. President Trump's supporters were worried. In addition to the tweet that he sent Mark Meadows after the attack, Sean Hannity apparently spoke with President Trump.
Uh-oh.
And warned him about what could happen. We understand that this text message that Sean Hannity sent to Kayleigh McEnany on January 7th shows what Mr. Hannity said to the president. First, no more stolen election talk.
Uh-oh.
Second, impeachment and 25th Amendment are real.
Woo-hoo.
Many people will quit.
Many people will quit. The rest of the text says he was intrigued by the pardon idea. Oy. Four, resistant, mm-hmm. but listened to Pence thoughts to make it right. And then five, seemed to like attending inauguration talk. I don't know what that means. But
I don't know either.
No, but let's keep going because it keeps going.
Let's listen, Ms. Hutchison, to what you told us about that and about the process of crafting those remarks.
I learned from a conversation with Mark and overhearing between him and White House counsel and Eric Hirschman as well, that Trump didn't necessarily think he needed to do anything more on the 7th than what he had already done on the 6th. When he was convinced to put out a video on the 7th, I understand that he had a lot of opinions about what the context of that announcement were to entail. I had original drafts of the speech where, you know, there were several lines that didn't make it in there about prosecuting the rioters or calling them violent. He didn't want that in there. He wanted to put in there that he wanted to potentially pardon them.
Pardon them!
And this is just with the increased emphasis of his mindset at the time, which was he didn't think that they did anything wrong. The people who did something wrong that day, or the person who did something wrong that day, was Mike Pence by not standing with him.
The person who did something wrong was Mike Pence by not staying with them. What? So they brought up pardons that you know, Trump floated pardoning these people. It was actually other people who wanted to be pardoned. All right, just this was news. This made news right here, right now.
Yep.
Ms. Hutchison, did Rudy Giuliani ever suggest that he was interested in receiving a presidential pardon related to January 6th?
He did.
Uh-oh.
And Ms. Hutchison, did White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows ever indicate that he was interested in receiving a presidential pardon related to January 6th?
Mr. Meadows did seek that pardon. Yes, ma'am.
Uh-oh.
Thank you, Ms. Hutchison.
Ruh-roh.
Ruh-roh. So, I mean, I've got some other clips, but that really is the gist of it. And
it is,
that
is
damning testimony. That's just, those are some holy shit moments right there.
The whole thing was, I mean, the thing I've noticed about these hearings is I look at the clock and they're over and I think it's only been 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, right. That they're so riveting. They're so full of information.
Yep.
There isn't a moment wasted. And every single witness has something new to say. And every single witness has something explosive to say. There isn't, they knew how, this committee knows what they're doing. And they do it well.
Very well. I got to play one other thing, because apparently there was another hearing, I think it was today, in the House.
Oh.
And Marjorie Taylor Greene was testifying.
Oh.
And Jamie Raskin was on the committee. And let me just play this exchange for you. Because remember when we heard the clip about all the weapons that were found on these insurrectionists? Well,
you mean the AR-15 and the knives?
And the guns and the Glocks and the this and the that. And,
yeah.
I didn't play the clip, but flagpoles with spears tacked on to the end of the flagpoles to be used as weapons. So that is a clip that she testified to. But, you know, time. We've only got a few minutes left. So let me play this last one from a different hearing. Just listen.
I just found something that said, you're quoted as saying in talking to Real America's Voice that whereas January 6th was just a riot at the Capitol And if you think what our Declaration of Independence says, it says to overthrow tyrants.
Uh-huh.
So do you think that the assault on the Capitol was a legitimate exercise of popular insurrection?
Oh, Mr. Raskins, I know it's early in the morning, but this is the Rules Committee. This isn't your Trump Derangement Committee that you call the January 6th Committee.
Oh, my God.
My last name doesn't have an S on it, Ms.
Oh,
Greens.
I apologize.
Okay. Okay, you've been talking about the Second Amendment. You came here to talk to us about the Second Amendment.
I'm here to talk about due process rights and protecting Americans' due process rights.
All right. So I just want to be clear. You've been quoted at least as saying that the January 6th riot at the Capitol was in the spirit of the Declaration of Independence, which says you can overthrow tyrants. You've also testified that people have a right to carry guns, presumably wherever they want to go. So it seems to me that lots of people were armed on that day, but the logic of your argument is that everybody could have been armed and brought their weapons with them. And I'll take that
What evidence do you have that a lot of people were armed that day? Oh, Mr. Raskin, do you have that to introduce into the record?
Just wait for it. But when it comes out, presumably you'll be supporting it, right?
They
have a right to have guns and knives with them. Is that right?
Mr. Raskin.
Is that your position?
No, Mr. Raskin.
No, I'm going to ask the questions here because this is the Rules Committee. You're not a member of the Rules Committee, Ms. Green. Are you?
I'm a witness.
Are you a member of the Rules Committee?
No,
I'm a witness here at the Rules Committee.
Okay, so let me just ask you a question.
That is talking about due process rights, not your lies about January
6th. Oh, my God.
About President Trump and others.
Okay.
Okay.
I never mentioned him. You've brought him up. All right, I think...
do you have evidence? Oh, just wait. It's coming.
Oh, that was great. Uh-huh. Oh, and by the way, my last name doesn't have
S. Yeah, there's no S. It's just Raskin.
Oh, she's so horrible.
She's horrible.
Like, I want to just throw ketchup at her.
Yeah. Yeah. And can I just mention we've only got like less than a minute left. Today is primary day in Colorado, Illinois, New York, Oklahoma, Utah, and there are runoffs in Mississippi and South Carolina. In Illinois, there's a woman in Congress, believe it or not. Her name is Mary Miller, and Trump did a rally to boost her and endorse her. And listen to what she said about overturning Roe v. Wade.
President Trump, on behalf of all the MAGA patriots in America, I want to thank you for the historic victory for white life in the Supreme Court yesterday.
The victory for white life. She did say that. For white life in the Supreme Court yesterday.
God.
Did you not hear that?
No.
Let me play it for you again.
President Trump, on behalf of all the MAGA patriots in America, I want to thank you for the historic victory for white life in the Supreme Court yesterday.
For white life in the Supreme Court yesterday. Her people are trying to say, she meant to say right to life.
Yeah.
And she said white life. Hey, she said it. Those words came out of her mouth. Enough said.
Not only that, but that's not that kind of slip. You have to she didn't subtract words.
That's
she
right.
She said the way she.
Yes, she did.
She juxtaposed those two words. Yeah,
white
so that wasn't
life.
A mistake.
This is a victory for white life.
My God.
Illinois, you know what to do. Wherever she's running, vote against her. I know it's a Republican primary, I'm sure. So, and she's the sitting member, but she shouldn't be. White life?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
United States of Nazis now. It's theocracy.
Yep, that's where we are.
God.
All right. Well, God laugh. Well, you're in Canada,
from Canada
for
where
a
they
month
just,
now,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Yeah. The whole month of July.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll talk in a couple of weeks or what's yeah? So we'll do it again.
I have no idea.
All right. We'll play it by ear.
Okay.
Laffy, you can still find her on the Twitters. Gotta laugh, just like she's still in California, but she's in Canada now. And we're jealous.
Right.
I'm jealous.
We are.
All right. Well, enjoy it.
I love it up here. Love it.
Post pictures.
I will.
Post
Thank
pictures.
You.
Okay?
I have been.
I know. Well, keep it up. Because we're living vicariously through you now. All right, Laffy.
You got it.
All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.
All right. Okay. And to you guys, thank you for being here and for caring. I'm not sure what we're doing tomorrow, but tomorrow morning, the Supreme Court is going to announce yet more Supreme Court decisions. There are four left. I don't know what else they can do to hurt us, but they will try. So we'll talk about it. Well, I'll take phone calls. We'll deal with whatever's going on. Maybe we'll have a guest for a little while. I don't know yet. We'll play it by ear. But that's what's happening tomorrow. More from the Supreme Court, or actually the fascist court of America, because there's nothing supreme about it. Not a damn thing. All right. With that, we're done. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'll see you tomorrow. And because we can, I will leave you with the news. All right. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler.
Sorry about that.
What's news from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Surprise! The House Select Committee investigating the January 6th Capitol attack said Monday that it had scheduled a previously unannounced Tuesday hearing to, quote, present recently obtained evidence and receive witness testimony. All right, we thought we'd have to wait till July, but we've since learned that the surprise witness is Cassidy Hutchinson. She's the former executive assistant to the former White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows. She's testified three times behind closed doors. She saw Mark Meadows burn documents after a meeting in his office with Representative Scott Perry of Pennsylvania, who was working closely with the White House to invalidate the results of the 2020 election. She testified that she remembered a Secret Service agent, quote, coming in and saying that we had intel reports, saying that there could potentially be violence on the 6th. She told the committee that the White House counsel's office, during a meeting with Meadows and Rudy Giuliani, among others, advised them that the whole alternate electors scheme was not legal. She testified that, quote, Mr. Giuliani, several of his associates, Mr. Meadows, members of Congress, were discussing a fake electors plan during Thanksgiving of 2020. She's given detailed testimony about a number of House Republicans who were involved with pressuring former Vice President Mike Pence to reject electors and encouraging protesters to march on the Capitol on January 6th. She is the key source for the revelation that six House Republicans sought pardons. She reportedly confirmed that Trump told Meadows on January 6th that the then president agreed with the rioters who were chanting, "Hang Mike Pence." And in one piece of her testimony that has been released, Hutchinson said that conversations about seizing voting machines, appointing Sidney Powell as a special counsel, and invoking martial law were stopped because, quote, it became clear that there would be mass resignations, including lawyers in the White House counsel's office. So we know that Hutchinson is testifying today, but that's all we know. There could be others testifying. We'll just have to wait and see. As to why now and why the urgency of the matter, Punchbowl News is reporting that there have been sincere concerns about Hutchinson's physical security because of what she knows and what she's revealed to the committee. They're also reporting that her firsthand account, her direct testimony and evidence, meaningfully informs the hearings the panel has planned for July. So today's hearing kicks off at 1 p.m. Eastern. We'll have lots of details on the Nicole Sandler Show at 5 Eastern here on the Progressive Voices channel. In other news, the Supreme Court ruled on Monday that a Washington State school district violated the religious freedom of a former high school football coach, Joseph Kennedy, who lost his job after holding post-game prayers on the 50-yard line. Kennedy did that for years and refused to stop after the Bremerton School District asked him to because administrators feared the district could be sued for violating students' religious rights. Well, the six members of the right-wing cabal on the Supreme Court said the First Amendment clause against the establishment of religion doesn't require the government to, quote, single out religious speech for special disfavor. The court's three liberal justices said in a dissent that the ruling weakened the nation's longstanding commitment to the separation of church and state. You think? They still have four more decisions to release. They'll do it again tomorrow morning. Lucky us. Meanwhile, Friday's announcement that the court has overturned Roe v. Wade is still sending shockwaves across the country. California's Democratic-controlled legislature on Monday approved a measure that would let voters decide in November whether to protect the right to an abortion in the state's constitution. Governor Gavin Newsom also issued an executive order saying California will not share medical records with anti-abortion states or extradite doctors who care for patients who come to the state to seek the procedure. Judges in Louisiana and Utah temporarily blocked state trigger laws intended to ban abortion as soon as the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, which it did on Friday. The Louisiana order followed a lawsuit by abortion providers calling the laws constitutionally vague. The judge didn't comment on the merits of the case, but set a hearing for July 8th. The Utah judge granted a 14-day restraining order requested by Planned Parenthood, citing the possibility of irreparable harm. 11 other states have similar trigger laws. WNBA star Brittany Griner briefly appeared in a Russian court on Monday where a judge ordered her held for an additional 6 months, basically detaining her through her set trial on drug charges. Her lawyer said the next hearing was set for July 1st, and that would mark the official start of the trial. The star of the Phoenix Mercury was arrested February 17th for allegedly trying to take cannabis vaping cartridges through a Moscow airport. She was charged with smuggling drugs into Russia, where she played basketball in the off-season. She could face up to 10 years in prison if convicted. And finally, it's Tuesday, Election Day. Primaries being held today in Colorado, Illinois, New York, Oklahoma, and Utah, with runoffs in Mississippi and South Carolina. Vote like your life depends on it. It does. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.